My name is Daniel Serwer. I'm Vice President for Peace and Stability Operations here at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and though some of my colleagues object, Iraq still belongs to me in the Institute. We still regard it as a peace and stability operation despite all the evidence to the contrary. It's a particular pleasure to welcome Mansour Moadel back to the Institute because he's been here a number of times, and Judy, correct me, he has been a grantee. Is he a grantee now as well?
I think it's still good.
He's still a grantee. So we want to underline that in particular. And I had the pleasure, I think it must be 2 years ago, of hearing you present some of your results. And I was very struck by the depth of what Mansour has to say about these things. This is not your usual kind of polling, I would say. This goes a little deeper than pure political polls, I would say. And we're very fortunate to have Steve Kull here to comment briefly afterwards. And I know we have a number of well-informed people around the table, so I hope we'll leave lots of time for questions as well. Their bios are available to you. I'm not going to read them. Mansour, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate having this opportunity to present some of the findings from sort of now it's beginning to look like a longitudinal value survey in Iraq. And to give you an idea about the trend in the Iraqi political values since December 2004, when we carried out our first comprehensive nationwide value survey in that country. Before I start, let me sort of very briefly present my view about at least the way I look at Iraq since the invasion in 2003. I believe the Iraqi situation could be best compared to a sort of a revolutionary situation. Many things that have happened in Iran has a resemblance to a revolutionary change, although the agent of that revolution was a foreign power that didn't act quite like a revolutionary leader, you know, but nonetheless, it brought about revolution. It's, you know, the invasion led to the overthrow of an old regime in 3 weeks, faster than any revolutionary movement in modern history. It effectuated major changes in power relations. The Sunni, as we know, that were politically and economically dominant, gave way to the Shiite power for perhaps for the first time in the Shiite history in that region. Then the rise of religious parties and the decline of, to some considerable extent, secular parties, and the solidification of the autonomous power of the courts in the north. Well, like any revolutionary movement, it was associated with human suffering. You know, lots of people lost their life. $1 billion worth of properties were destroyed. And in the process, I believe that the Iraqis were not passive bystanders, and they have been thinking about the issues and the things that happened to their countries. At the top of their concern is, of course, economic and security issues. And also they are have thought about other more fundamental, more general issues facing their society, including, you know, their identity. What are we? Are we Iraqis? Are we Muslim? Are we Arabs? You know, for the Kurds, you know, are we Kurds? And also they have been thinking about the relationship between religion and politics. So what I would like to present today is the result of that, perhaps what I consider to be reflection among Iraqis and how they thought about these issues and what are their resolutions thus far. The data that I'm going to present to you is based on four observations. The first survey was December 2004, the second April 2006. These first two were funded by grants.
No, probably not. You should note that cell phones make that happen, so if you have yours on, it would be good to turn it off.
That's a good thing to remember.
A little trick.
Okay, after our survey, the first survey was completed in 06, the assessment effect group connected to multinational forces in Iraq became interested in our survey, and I sent them a copy of our findings, and we began to have very interesting exchanges of ideas and data. I send them contingency tables about some of our key findings, and the association with the people, through email, has been very fruitful, and I believe that was, for me, an ideal example of an exchange between a member of academia and a member of the government, and that they have something, the data, and we know a little bit about theory and history, so we put our brain together in order to make sense about what is going on in that country. So as a result of that, I persuaded the group to include 10 of our questions in their monthly survey on October 06. And they did. They sent me first the answer to the questions, but they were nice enough to share with me their data. They had surveyed on April 06 and October 06, so I have that data. This was based on the sample size of more than almost 8,000 cases in face-to-face interviews. Then in March 07, my good friend, colleague, and collaborator, Monqet, who is the manager of the Independent Institute for Administration and Civil Society Studies, the Iraqi research firm that carried out all these surveys, agreed at his own expense to add 5 or 6 of our questions into his surveys, and 3 days ago I got the result from Iraq. So the last column's March 07. So I try to really make sense of the data and be as careful in analyzing as possible. But I warn you, I have the data for three days. So I was debating whether I should include it or not. But the finding is so interesting, so I decided to include it in my presentation. Now, one thing that you need to know about this data is that among Iraqis, there were a percentage who did not wish to be identified as Shia and Sunni, and so we call them Muslim. In 2004, they were 6%. In April 06, 14% didn't want to be identified, and that percentage declined in 06 and 07 to 2%. The result being that, the way I interpret it is that, these people were primarily in the mixed area, and they didn't want to be identified as a member of either sex because probably they were afraid. But because of the conflict and this sort of ethnic cleansing that is going on, the proportion of Iraqis that live in the mixed area has considerably declined. So that perhaps is the reason why the percentage who did not want to be identified as either Shiite or the Sunnis, that was declined to 2%. So these are 4 categories that we are using in presenting the findings. So let's begin with the decline in support for Islamic government and the Sharia versus increasing support for secular politics among Iraqis. These are 3 questions, that I put in wording, but I'll jump to sort of a summary of the first questions. Now, percentage of Iraqis responding that having a government that implement only the laws of the Sharia is very important. And there were 5 categories that you see are very important. Now, as you see, for the total population, those who said that a very important drop from 31 to 25% to 18% in 06, and it went up a little bit to 22% in 07. And the change among the Kurds and the Sunni is more dramatic. The Shiite still have problems. They haven't really quite let go of the idea of an Islamic government, although it hasn't increased, but it declined. But the decline is not really quite significant. Now, next question is, percentage of Iraqis responding that having an Islamic government where religious authorities have absolute power is very good. As you see among the Sunni, it dropped from 18 to 5 or 6% between October, between December 04 and October 06. Among the Shiite, it came down from 35 to 29%, among the Kurds from 10 to 3%, Muslim from 18 to 8%, and for the total population, it is from 26 to 18%. So we see that, you know, for the Iranian-style Islamic government, there is a declining support among Iraqis. Now, the next question is that percentage of Iraqis strongly agreeing that Iraq will be a better place if religion and politics are separated, basically because it's support for secular politics. You see among the Sunni, it jumped from 22% to 55, 56, and 07, it came down to 48%. So the notion that, you know, the Al-Qaeda is very popular among the Sunni, just that it's not correct because there is not much support for the Islamic government among the Sunni. And if there was a significant support, that support has been declining significantly since December of 04. The Shiites are still, you know, fluctuating. Well, in 06, 33% supported the idea, but now it went down to what it was in April of 06. You know, from October it was 33%, then went down to 19% in March 07. The Kurds is, of course, Kurds are much more secular than any other group in Iraq. The Muslims is, again, you know, highly supportive of the secular. And for the general, for the entire population, we see an increase in support for the separation of religion and politics among Iraqis between 2004 and March 2007. So these are the key issues. You know, our questionnaire has about more than 200 questions. So these are some of the most fundamental questions that relate to the issue of the relationship between religion and politics. Now, let's move on to another issue. And how do we test this? How do we test whether this trend is associated with other trends in Iraq? I mean, can the survey provide corroboration for the change that we have seen in Iraqi political values? Well, I reasoned that, given what I had, you know, in the data, I said that, well, if this decline is true, then there got to be a decline in popular support for the Iranian Islamic regime among the Iraqi Shiite. We know that among the rest of Iraqis, the Islamic regime is not popular at all. The 2006 survey showed that. But how do the Shiite feel about it? And if this trend is correct, then there must be a decline in support for religious party and an increase in support for secular parties. So in other words, the change in public opinion should somehow influence people's attitude toward religious parties. Now, we didn't ask questions specifically about Iraqis' attitude toward the Islamic regime, but we did ask them questions about their attitude toward Iranians, whether they wish to have Iranian as neighbors. Now, these are the findings. Now, percentage of Iraqis expressing that having Iranian as neighbor is unacceptable. Now, among the Sunnis, I mean, this is the United, you know, it was 97% by October 06. Among the Shiites, it was 50-50 between December 04 and April 06, but in October 06, it jumped to 73%. So for the total population, it is about, you know, 82% of Iraqis in October 06 did not want to have Iranian as neighbors. So I interpret this, short of not having other direct questions that could tell us about the changes in attitude historically, that could be an indication of the Shiite attitude toward Islamic regime. So we see that the popularity of that regime is declining among Iraqi Shiites. Now, moving on to our political parties. These data are collected by the multinational forces, but by the same research organization. It is between April 2006 and October 2006. Now, as you see, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being very unfavorable and 10 being very favorable, how would you rate the following organizations? Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq. It is the organization that was established by the Iranian regime, by actually Ayatollah Khomeini, to in defense of Islamic movement in Iraq, with the objective of establishing Islamic government there. As you see, the unfavorable rating jumped from 32% to 42%, and the favorable from dropped from 16 to 7. Those who said don't know, is about the same, 19 and 18%. If I compare the means between the two periods, the mean also reflect that the mean declined significantly, meaning that the unfavorable rating is true for the entire, for all the categories. Well, now the war party, again the same thing. You see the unfavorable rating has gone up and the favorable rating dropped from 20 to 7%. Is another Shiite party. This is another Shiite party belonging to our friends, the Muqtada Sadr, as you see. I'm just joking, don't get seriously. Again, it went up from 30 to 40%, and the favorable rating came down from 21 to 12%. Another one, Fadila, the same thing. We see that, that the unfavorable rating has increased by 12%, and the favorable rating didn't have much, from 10 to 4%. Now, the interesting part is this. I mean, this is the only sort of a secular party. Well, the unfavorable rating went up, but the favorable rating went up a little bit, 3%. So it shows a trend, but it is not as significant as we wish that to be. If you compare the mean, you see a little bit change. Well, the problem is that many Iraqi secularists have left the country. I mean, they are waiting for America to establish security and for them to come back. But as you see that, the mean, again, if they were doing bad, they are not doing worse. They're doing a little bit better, But at that part, we haven't shown the change in, so far, I haven't seen any significant change in support for secular parties among Iraqis. And this is the Sunni political party.
Can you say what you just said again about the secular parties? You have not seen a change?
I haven't seen a worsening situation, support for them, but I haven't seen a significant shift in Iraqi attitude in support of the secular party, as this data shows.
So they moved down as well?
Well, and see, oh, sorry. What happened? I'm supposed to go this way. How should I go back?
Yes.
Am I going back?
No.
Yeah, you're going back.
Okay. So the Iraqi National Alliance, as you see that, their unfavorable rating has gone up, but the amount that it has gone up is not as much as the unfavorable rating, change in unfavorable rating among the religious party. But their favorable rating has went up from 2 to 5%. This change is not that significant. It is in the right direction, but not. We cannot really get too excited about this, Now, this is the Iraqi Islamic Party, the Sunni party, the same thing, that there is a decline in support among Iraqis for this party. So far, we have seen the trend towards, if I put them all together, you can see that, that this is the change percent rating very favorable, and you see the change in all of them. And the only exception, as I say, is Iraqi National Alliance. There's a secular party. All other religious parties have a decline in popular support, some more than the others. Now, again, this unfavorable rating, you see that it has gone up quite a bit between the two survey. Okay, now, so far we showed that there is a trend in towards sort of a secular politics in public opinion among Iraqis. How about nationalism? How do Iraqis define themselves? Are they define themselves as primarily as Arabs, as Iraqis, as Muslim, or among the Kurds, or as Kurds, if we ask them? Which one do you think, do you have a wild guess? You know, if you ask Iraqis, you know, how do you define yourself? You know, are you above all Muslim, or above all Iraqis, above all Arabs, or others? Well, I'm going to tell you this. So, first, one thing is very interesting about this slide. We know that from other cases that foreign occupation provokes national pride among the people within the occupied territory. As you see that, there is a heightened, there is a high level of national pride, and this is quite high on the international scale. I think Iraq is among the, in the World Value Survey scale, is among the top 10 or so in terms of national pride. But one of the most interesting aspect of this slide is among the Kurds. In 2004, 35% of the Kurds said that they are proud to be, very proud to be Iraqis. In 2006, it jumped to 52%. In October 2006, it jumped to 77%. March 2007, it came down to about 60%, but it's still high. That is very interesting finding, because that shows that the Iraqi Kurds are increasingly identifying with Iraqi as a nation. They feel proud to be Iraqis. That is moving toward national integration and the emergence of a sort of a national state. If the Kurds were thinking otherwise, that during these three years, the percentage of the Kurds who expressed very proud to be Iraqis was declining, then say that what the Kurds are moving towards separation. But that, at least on this, if you use that as an indication of national integration of Kurds into a, you know, an Iraqi nation, that shows that Iraq's the Kurds are getting a little bit closer to the rest of Iraqis. Another one, Iraqis themselves as Iraqis above all. This is fascinating. I did not expect that change to be so dramatic, particularly. See, for the total population, it is in 2004, 23% of Iraqis indicated that they are Iraqis above all. In 2006, it went up to 28%, and in March 2007, it went to 54%. Among the Sunni and the Shiite, this is quite dramatic. And even among the Kurds, you know, now 20% of the Kurds feel that or express themselves as to be Iraqis above all, and which is not insignificant, you know, particularly considering the change since 2004. So we see the rise of national identity, specifically territorial nationalism among Iraqis. One thing that you should also note, I haven't reported here, is that Arab identity is practically dead in Arab countries. Except among Iranian Arabs. You know, Iranian Arabs are more Arabs than any other Arabs living, you know, in other Arab countries. You know, the maximum is, I think, about Jordanian or more so among the Saudis, who about 10% define themselves as Arab above all. Among Iraqis, not more than 2%. Now, in the urban area, the change is even more noticeable, given that nationalism has always been historically an urban phenomenon, primarily in Islamic countries. So it is natural that to see that in urban areas, you know, attachment to national identity to be much stronger than in the rural areas. Now, Iraq is describing itself as Muslim above all. You see that at the beginning, 2004 was among the Sunni was 76%, the Shia 77%, and in 2007 it dropped to 46% and 37% respectively. And as you see, 64 and 65 for the total population came down to 37% in March of 07. So the Islamic identity has significantly dropped. And the interesting thing about this particular measure is that it has, first, it is an indication of the rise of sort of territorial nationalism, number one. Number two, since we ask respondents to choose between Islamic identity and Iraqi identity and Arab identity, so it has a secular component.
Yeah. Do you mind if I methodological question? Did you use cards with the choices, or were these red? The choices red.
I have to ask my colleagues.
Okay. Sometimes there are differences.
But they have done it, you know, the same organization have done it, you know, so I do not know exactly which one.
No, so comparability and the percentages, yeah. Perhaps.
But whatever method, yes.
When you say Muslim here, does that mean Muslim in contrast to the Christian population?
This category of Muslim? This one? This is, are you talking about which one? The category of Muslim? Yeah. Well, we ask Iraqis their religion.
Right.
They said Muslim.
Right.
Well, then some of them, they said Shiite Muslim. The other group say that it was Sunni Muslim. Then we ask, okay, well, forgive me. This is a very sensitive question, but what doctrine do you believe in? Many of them say, okay, I believe in Sunni. The other one said that, you know. But there was a percentage among the respondents who did not want to be identified as member of either sect.
Yeah, this is Muslim, but
Shiite or the Sunni. So they could be both. They could be either Sunni or Shiite. The reason behind that was, one was a security. They didn't want to be identified as the member of either, because they thought that they could be killed. The other interpretation would be that this is perhaps a small section of them would be sort of a more reflective thinking that we are all Muslims. It is not a good idea to have to be identified as a member of a, you know, Shiite or Sunni, because it divides it. Now, to underscore the significance of our finding, I'm comparing Iraqi's attitude toward their individual, their identity in the Baghdad province with the similar data in other provinces, cities in other Islamic countries. In Amman, Jordan, in 2001, only 12% defined themselves as Jordanian above all. In Cairo, Egypt, that used to be the hotbed of Egyptian nationalism in the early 19th century, only 11% defined themselves as Egyptian above all. Even the survey we carried out a month ago or so in Egypt, this value didn't change. You know, Egyptian predominantly defined themselves as Muslim above all. In Rabat, Morocco, it is 34%. Saudi Arabia, 17%, even higher than Amman, or Cairo. Tehran, in 2000 was 38% and went up in 2005 to 59%. So you see that, you know, in Iraq in 2004, in Baghdad province, the percentage of Iraqis said that they were Iraqis above all went up from 30 to 60% now to 75%. That is, perhaps in we can say that in Islamic Middle East, Iran and Iraq are the only countries that the majority of the population do not define themselves primarily as Muslim when it comes to individual identity. When they have to choice between being Iraqis and being Muslim, they choose their country as their identity rather than religion. This is fascinating. Now, this is another factor that gives us an idea of why Iraqis support sort of territorial nationalism. We asked three questions in 2006 survey, April 2006 survey, that how worried are you about the safety of your family, how worried are you about the safety of the people of your sect, and how much do you worry about, or worried are you about the unity of your country? Now, the percentage who said that they were very worried about family, sect, and country among Arab and Kurds is presented here. As you see, only 44% of Iraqi Arabs said that they worry about the members, the safety of the people of their sects. 49% said that they worry about the safety of the members of their family. 68% worried about the unity of their country. Iraqi worry more about the unity of their country than they do about the family and the sect. So that shows that this is how nationalist awareness emerges in a society. One last question that, you know, is not really consistent with this, but I thought people would ask me about, you know, attitude toward the coalition forces. You know, when do you think U.S. and other coalition forces should leave Iraq? As you see that a great majority of Iraqis would like us to leave now. Now, what does it mean? How much time do I have?
Well, you're close to.
Okay, so let me summarize, you know, with the meaning of this. In the past, you know, maybe until late 60s, 70s, sociologists used to think that the emergence of secular politics and nationalism is an outcome of a modernization process. You know, industrialization, urbanization, the development of educated elite, has an end result, and that end result is modernity. Well, the theory has been widely criticized, particularly in the Middle East. We have seen since the 19th century objective changes taking place. You know, we have seen the decline of the old or the traditional order, the emergence of national market, the development of capitalism, integration of national economy into the world capitalist system, the emergence of new social classes, and the emergence of educated elite, as well as the construction of the massive bureaucratic and military organization of the modern state. All these objective changes have taken place, but no modern values, in a sense, like, you know, nationalism and secularism. As a matter of fact, secularism has been in crisis in Islamic countries for some time. So if modernization theory is wrong, then how do we explain the emergence of a new cultural movement? Now, sociologists look at historical conjuncture, meaning that, you know, a specific combination of political, cultural, and economic forces, and that combination promote a particular mode of cultural movement and cultural discourses. Now, variation of the in historical conjuncture produces variation in cultural movement. To give you an example, in Iran in late 19th century and Syria in the same general period, we see the emergence of national constitutionalism and liberalism, in a sense. You know, in Iran, for example, we see the emergence of anti-clerical secularism and constitutional movement. Why? Because the target in opposition to which that the that movement, revolution movement, emerged, was characterized by absolutist monarch and the domination of religious institution. So when we have that combination, as you know, when we have an absolutist monarchy and the religious establishment that has control over culture, the reaction to that is liberalism and constitutionalism, both in the rise of liberal Arabism in Syria in late 19th and early 20th century, and in Iran during the same period is an example. When we see a foreign occupation, and if, like in Egypt, we see the emergence of territorial nationalism. Iran in the late 19th century was not really a nationalist movement primarily. It was anti-clerical, secularist, and constitutional movement. When Iran's economy was dominated by the British oil industry, that was the opposition movement was primarily reflected in the rise of economic nationalism. So what we see here in Iraq and to some extent in Iran is the same thing. In Iran, we see the rise of some sort of liberal Islam and secular politics in a positional relation to the religious establishment that the revolution brought to power. In Iraq also, the rise of territorial nationalism is a response to foreign occupation. And the rise of secularism, in my view, has to do with the bankruptcy of the religious parties. You know, the Iraqis have seen what religion could do to their social freedom, political freedom, and they come to the conclusion that maybe mixing religion and politics is not a good idea. So we have seen a lot of bad news about Iraq, but if our project has been to establish support for a sort of liberal politics in a, not in its Western sense, but in a secular politics and nationalism and democracy, it seems to me that the Iraqi public are moving in that direction. Thank you very much.
Steve, and there's a seat here if you would like to take one. We're not quite ready for questions yet. We're going to hear from Steve Culp first.
Thank you very much for having me, and this is a very interesting study, and I want to say right off the bat that I basically agree with the view that what is emerging here is something of a greater national identity, though I'm going to sort of zero in on a number of findings and point at some other data that calls some of these dynamics into question. It's very important to note that the Iraqis from the beginning most rejected the Iranian model. When asked by IRI in 2005 what kind of a future Iraqi government they would prefer, only 22% preferred a religious system. And when asked what kind of role they would like religious leaders to play, only 28% supported the idea of them serving in government. 39%, though, liked the idea of them endorsing candidates, but not serving in office. And it's also. In the poll that was done by ABC just recently, as well as in November 05, most recently, only 22% endorsed the Islamic State as a model, far fewer than endorsed the democracy or a strong leader. But this number was actually up a bit from November 05. Now, there is, though, a finding here that is really quite dramatic, which was the notion of the separation of church and state. In 04, 58% clearly rejected the idea of a separation of church and state. And according to this newest data, 58% now say the opposite, that it would be better if religion and politics were separated. So this is I think there are signs here of some shifting around, something happening here. Now, I think, though, that there's still rather strong evidence for the idea that Iraq will be as an Islamic state. But the movement, I think, has more to do with that the government will not be dominated by any particular sect. That's my hypothesis, and it's consistent with what you're saying, but it's targeted a little bit more precisely, because I think that back there, there's definitely still support for the Islamic State model and the idea that the Sharia is a fundamental basis for Iraqi law. Changing views of Iran, we polled in January 06 and in September 06 and found absolutely no change, barely a point of movement. So this evidence of growing national identity, I find very interesting, it's corroborated by some other data that we found, with strong majorities supporting a strong central government, and that the idea that the government would be stronger and that it would dominate the militias, that it would get rid of the militias. This is a very a widely felt view in among Iraqis. I really compliment you looking through all that smoke and all that complexity. You saw something emerging there, because there really is so much chaos, and there are other data that seem to be in line with that, but at the same time, I think that there's we shouldn't have in mind that the emergence of a central unified state or unified identity is necessarily the same as, or even collinear with, attitudes about the role of Islam in the formation of the Iraqi state. And I think it would be great if there were questions that could try to tweeze that apart about, what role do you want Islam to play, and how can we be sure, though, that this doesn't become the basis for government being an arena for sectarian conflict? Because I think that's really the, when I look at all that data, my hypothesis is that that's what people are saying. Is that they want to have, they do want the Islamic State, they do want it to play a role, but they want to also make sure that this just doesn't keep feeding the kinds of conflict that they're seeing on a day-to-day basis, right, and suffering from quite a lot.
Thank you, Steve. I think I have some indications that we have a number of questions, so I'm going to take maybe two or three at a time and then ask you to respond, please.
Yes, particularly to Dr. Moadil. I think you said that some 75% of Baghdadis see themselves as Iraqis first, mm-hmm, overall. Okay. And you cited industrialization and some other things, other phenomenon we see in a lot of countries. How much, however, could be attributed specifically to some 40 years of being ruled by a very secular, fundamentally secular, National Socialist Party, and the experience of relative stability that they enjoyed under that. And then secondly, as for the wanting the coalition to leave immediately, how much, I wonder, would you speculate, would be attributable to the inconvenience and collateral damage fatalities the population experience.
Let me take another.
Yeah.
I should have asked you to introduce yourself.
I'm the company senate, until recently, a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps.
Michael Haddon, independent scholar. A couple questions, quick questions. To what extent the unfavorable, Dr. Moadil, the unfavorable basically, view toward Iran, or Islamic Republic of Iran, in your view, is related to the 8-year bloody war that they had with Iran. Other quick question. On your first slide that you had, that March 07 survey, when you add up between the 4 months, it doesn't add to 100%, it adds to 93%. The other three, they do add to 100%, so I was wondering what happened to the other 70. And the last point, that those slides that you had, scale of 1 to 10 attitudes towards different parties, mm-hmm, in Iraq, there was a significant percentage in the don't know category, more than 50%. I wonder, from a statistical point of view, whether that will, be significant in terms of analyzing the results.
Yeah, I think we should give you a chance. These are quite detailed questions, you're going to have a hard time remembering.
First, you mentioned about the role of a secular state in the rise of nationalism. One thing, our data show that, you know, what I'm saying is that is the changes have taken place between 2004 and 2007. But the kind of secular state that has been dominant in Iraq was a sort of Arab nationalist, you know, that, you know, Arab nationalism was first forcefully promoted by the Hashemite, you know, that, you know, first formed the monarchy after the Ottomans were overthrown. And one of the most, that also related to your question, is that one of the most important component of Arab nationalism is anti-Persianism, particularly among Iraqis, that as early as the 20s and 30s, they, that in the textbook, they were talking about that the Persians are even worse than the British imperialism, so we were on a same category. So the war, in a sense, was the one outcome and at the same time reinforced this hostile attitude between the two nations. Well, Iranians at the same time are also anti-Arabs, you know. I mean, the difference between, those of us who are, you know, coming from the Middle East get surprised when non-Middle Easterners put us in the same categories, you know. That's the word, you know, you don't put French and Americans in the same categories, you know. So the Iranian and the Persian, there are lots of, you know, cultural differences, the cultural animosities. Particularly even now, there's a brand of Iranian nationalist movement that is blaming every suffering that we have now on the fact that the Arab invaded Iran and they brought their religion and imposed it on us. So the rise of nationalism, also sort of specifically Iraqi nationalism, it seems to me that more related to what had happened in the last few years, in my view. I mean, when you, usually idea emerge within the point of difference. In the past, we used to think that ideas rested on economic development and industrialization. When there is a change in objective conditions, new idea emerges. But now ideas emerge when we see differences. You know, this actually, this was not the invention of sociology, it was linguistic. You say that, well, we cannot define tree, we cannot define bushes, but we have seen trees and bushes, and because of their differences, we can identify. So by the same token, modern ideas emerges when we observe the fact that in case of Iraq is that the country is occupied by an old powerful and some crucial says arrogant superpower who doesn't talk like us, doesn't behave like us, doesn't have the same religion. So just by the daily encounter with foreigners, it just reinforces your sense of otherness, that I'm Iraqis. And the very fact that they see the rest of the Arab nations not doing nothing, so that further reinforces the sense of Iraqiness or the Iraqi national identity. It also shows another thing. Iraqis also have a strong sense of sort of a anti-foreign attitude in general. You know, we call it sort of a xenophobia. The percentage of Iraqis who do not like to have any country as neighbor is more than 50. Particularly in 2004, at least Jordanians were rejected by less than 50%. But in 2006, even Jordanians were unwelcome in Iraq as neighbors. So it has to do with the current insecurity situation. Now, about the categories, did not include the Christian and other small minorities in the data. That's why you see inconsistency. About the don't knows, yeah, that is a problem when they have at least 20%. But, you know, the sample size is very large. It's almost 8,000 cases. So I think, despite the fact that we have the don't know stays more or less the same between the two surveys. So, and the shift in the attitude is quite dramatic in favorable and unfavorable attitude among Iraqis. So I can still argue that the shift represents a real change in Iraqi attitude toward religious parties.
Steve?
I just wanted to add to that and make a comment about this slide. Because there are a number of other questions out there, ones that we've done, ABC, others, about what Iraqis want at this time. And when we offered the option of a timeline, then 35% want that to be a minimal timeline. Another 37%, I think it was, wanted 1 year.
You're talking timeline for withdrawal.
Timeline for withdrawal. And the what's critical there is that three quarters of Iraqis believe that the U.S. plans to stay indefinitely, to have permanent bases. And that is a real affront to their sense of national identity. I quite agree that these two factors are quite related. And the if you give them the opportunity, or they're looking for a way to express that frustration, they may express that. But if there's a commitment that the U.S. is going to get out, then the attitudes change. In fact, 61% approve of attacks on U.S. troops. Half of those who say that don't want the U.S. out immediately. Isn't that interesting? So they're hammering on them as a way of putting pressure on them to ultimately leave, even if they don't want them to leave immediately, because the presence, U.S. presence there in a way that looks open-ended, means that ultimately the U.S. is the power, and that they are occupied, and that it is an affront to their national identity. And as the national identity grows and grows stronger, that does naturally express itself as this sort of desire to eject this foreign body, and if it makes the commitment that it's on its way out, that it is not, you know, in a sense, there is a permanent imperial presence, that could actually change the immediate attitudes. But you're going to see different poll questions that have a different mix on this, and I think that's the key explanation.
Getting a picture of the United States doing a great favor to Iraqi national unity, but it's rather anti-intuitive. Rand?
I want to continue a little bit on what Steve was saying, because every poll that has been conducted, most Iraqis say we want to the U.S. to leave immediately. And yet, when you talk to Iraqis, and we're not talking about politicians, but very ordinary Iraqis, they say it'll be a disaster if the U.S. leaves right now and too soon. And so there is something about the way these surveys are conducted or the questions are phrased that is not delivering a true picture. And I think I would very much like you to comment on your methodology and describe it, because I think that becomes a crucial question. It strikes me, it's very nice to see all this, because it really gives one hope. But I have to tell you that I'm a bit skeptical, because I have a feeling that what we're measuring is reactive responses rather than core values which are changing. So that they are now reacting, everybody says, oh, we don't like the religious parties because the religious parties in power haven't delivered. Not because they have thought about it and they have thought that these religious parties are antithetical to national unity. So we're getting a lot of knee-jerk reactions in these surveys. And this is what scares me, that we're beginning to either increase our optimism or fall into terrible pessimism, or indeed build policy decisions based on surveys like that. And I think that becomes very dangerous. So that's one thing. And the question of methodology. I have a couple more questions. They're very quick. In the endorsement or lack of endorsement for political parties, there wasn't a breakdown by sect. It was simply which party we have a favorable response to, and I would like to see it, if possible, by sect. And another question is, are you going to be repeating these surveys, or is that the end? because it would be really fascinating to do it. And to do it at critical junctures. For example, I noticed you did one December 04, which is very illuminating about the elections in January 05.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a referendum in October 05.
Mm-hmm.
We had other elections in December 05, and it would be interesting to look at political turning points and do these surveys and see whether elections, for example, actually endorse the results of the surveys or not.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that was,
yes,
that was too much.
Can I make just one comment on,
sure,
the methodology? As you probably know, one of the classic problems is that respondents will try to give the answer that they think the interviewer wants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why sometimes devices like cards make it a little bit more objective. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's a bit hard to understand some of this without getting a far better idea.
Could you introduce yourself?
Sorry, Stuart Schwartz.
Arend Al-Rahim, fellow at USIP.
Yeah. And
Stuart Schwartz.
Where are you?
Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm. In the questionnaire, we have, you know, the English version of the part of the World Value Survey. We have this as a card to use for that, but I couldn't really give you an answer whether actually the Iraqi researchers used it, because at some point I have to, you know, they are the one who are doing it, and they have to do it the best way that they think it is possible to do. Now, going back to your questions, let's start with the explaining changes. You know that the emergence of the idea of democracy in the West, it wasn't that all of a sudden philosophers sit down and say, "Well, this is a good idea, let's have it." No, first there was Magna Carta, and they practiced it. And they said, "Oh, that is a good idea. Let's," you know. Then it was, you know, they theorized about it afterward. It wasn't really before the emergence of democracy. So the point is that people are practical, they are not theoretical. You know, old Marx says it, and as other people, the history of the development of ideas have also indicated that there is a sort of this relationship between, you know, the changes in social conditions and the emergence of different ideas. So what I'm arguing is that the Iraqis, as a result of the practical experience, come to the conclusion that it would be better to have secular politics. This, you know, even the meaning of, you know, we have a secularist definition of secularism that is not good and that is in crisis. And there is this notion that we are Muslim, we believe in Islam, we like the Sharia, but nonetheless we don't want the clergy to micromanage everything as they do in Iran. They want a degree of the separation between religion and the state. And the reality of secular politics have been recognized in historical Islam. It is only the fundamentalists and the Orientalists believe that there is a unity between religion and politics in Islam. But that's another issue. But the thing is that when people practically come to that conclusion and they realize that a particular political model works, then it is up to, you know, the ideologue, the political thinkers, those who are in charge of university, to institutionalize changes. I mean, then the new ideas, you know, become the permanent feature of social order. I'm not claiming that now secular politics and nationalism for good is part of Iraq's social order. I'm saying that the Iraqis have come to that conclusion. But what is going to happen next depends on a wide variety of issues. But it is moving in the right direction. At least it's in the direction that I see that it is conducive to development of national integration and secular politics. Now, about methodology. Well, you said that you talk to people and they told you such and such, but now that we talk to a lot of people, have no legitimacy. So which one? If you talk to a group of people, Iraqis, and told you something and survey said something different, and if the survey is done properly, that would mean that the survey is more reliable than what you are hearing from political commentators and intellectual leaders. That is actually the good things about the survey research, is that we do not take things for granted. We ask people how they feel about the basic issues, you know, facing their society. If the methodology is done properly, if the sample is done you know, correctly, if the people, you know, there are lots of ifs, you know, then we can argue that, you know, the finding is much more reliable than anecdotal evidence that you see from political commentators or people coming from, you know, the people that we meet spontaneously. About, I have break down the thing in terms of sex, and that shows pretty much, but there are variations. For example, in Najaf, the rejection, about 9% believe in the separation of religion and politics, only 2% or 9% believe in Iraqi identity, they are all Muslim identity. Karbala is just different, you know, it's another religious center. So there are considerable variation in the city. There is another, you know, I'm in contact with my Iraqi research, I said that, well, there is, they are not as secular as they were 6 months ago. What is going on? I do not know exactly. Maybe because the survey was conducted right after Muharram, and that has, you know, during that period, people are a little more religious, you know, and that has some effect. The trend is there, although we see that there is a fluctuation. You know, some part of it has to do with the sampling fluctuation. Part of it has to do with, you know, people change their views in a period of major social transition. You know, so. And one last point I want to mention that is very important is that survey research must be interpreted within the context of other researches, particularly historical research. You know, if you want to really make a definitive judgment about what is going on in Iraq or any other Islamic country, you must be at least familiar with the history and the culture of the people. Otherwise, it would be very difficult to interpret the findings.
You and then there, and I'm afraid those will have to be the last two questions.
Margaret Daly Hayes. I can imagine that the responses that you get in terms of support or lack of support for political parties is really reflects kind of a pox on all of your houses because, as you said, nobody is delivering the goods. But it appears that in the survey you have asked some questions about what people expect of government. Order is probably on the top of that, but what other expectations do you see in the reports with respect to a central government? And secondly, did you ask any questions that would reflect attitudes about the ongoing violence?
And let me take. Okay.
I'm a little concerned about making decisions based upon polls. And as one example, the Kurds have showed an increase in calling themselves Iraqi. But if someone tried to sell Iraqi flags in Kurdish territory, I think they'd be surprised that they're not prepared to see, because Talabani, who's a Kurd, is president now. And that may be the only reason. Mm-hmm. The same thing if you ask the Iraqis, are they worried about the situation? But said, are they concerned? I think you may have gotten a different response. Not too many, right? There's a lot are involved actually, you know, in the bombings themselves. Whereas almost all Iraqis, no matter where they live, they really feel, you know, that the Iraqi state is in trouble. So I'm saying, although these polls may be good, I think it needs a little bit more to make decisions based upon
it. To respond to your question, I agree with you. You know, social science is analytical, but policy should be holistic. You know, I mean, considering all aspects of the, you know, compartmentalization of problem, particularly in the Middle East, is not going to work, or even the Iraqi problem. What I'm not arguing that, you know, that where we should be excited and just based on this say that things are moving in the right direction. This is only one level. And it is always the case, particularly in recent history in the Middle East, that violence has become a sort of accepted instrument of power. That if you are a member of a well-organized group with unlimited, you know, desire to kill people, you have, you know, display considerable amount of brutality, you may be able to monopolize the state the same way that the Iraqis, Baathists, or the more so the Syrian government has done. You know, there are small minorities, but they are well united. And even in Iran, I mean, I can say that in Iran, there's a small group of people who have, you know, a strong unity, and they could basically, they have enough ability to eliminate the opposition for the time being. You know, in order to make really a effective policy recommendation, we have to also look at what is going on group level. What is the direction of political parties? How do intellectuals relate to one another? You know, these are also important. This on the one side. And finally, what Iraq's expectation, number one, is to security. You know, is the top number one concern. You know, all the our poll has indicated, and they are still believe that the government should provide basic. You know, not really. It is the responsibility of the government to provide for their, for the not only safety but also for their economic and job creation. Another thing that I didn't discuss is that there hasn't been any really significant changes in attitude toward gender. I mean, the Iraqis' attitude toward gender relationship is, for the want of a better word, is horrible. You know, it's just it is really worse than Saudi Arabia. I mean. We ask question that, you know, which one is more important as a basis for marriage, you know, parental approval or love? 75% of Iraqis say that it is parental approval. In Saudi Arabia, it is 50%. Saudi Arabia, I mean, the Saudis are much more, in some issues, are much more progressive than even other Arab countries. And it is amazing, you know, but the survey showed that there is some sort of a liberal trend in Saudi Arabia that doesn't exist in other Arab countries. I mean, by other Arab countries, I mean Jordan and Egypt. So again, you know, in the course of, if my argument is correct, then at some point there should be some level of softening of attitude of Iraqis toward gender. But at the moment, the support for polygamy, gender equality, is very high, much higher than many other countries.
I'm going to have to wrap things up there. I think, in conclusion, I'd only say that this gives us a much deeper picture of what's going on, an interesting picture, one that you have to be cautious about drawing policy conclusions from, but I'd be cautious about drawing policy conclusions from the headlines in the newspapers as well. And it seems to me that this is a real contribution on your part, Mansoor, and we appreciate your coming and bringing it to us, and we look forward to further rounds of questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.